I'm going to have a talk today about the hardware design of the Tanmatsu badge, which as far as we know is also the base for the Y badge. And there is a little elephant in the room that we have to get rid of. Have to get out of the way, actually. And that is, although we're not going to finish the badge. We did enough badges in the past that at least we can talk about the whole process. And about what happened, we had a long and hard talk about that. And we concluded that in the end, you will get happier, healthier, without drama, and without looking for drama. So if you don't mind, I would keep it at that and just know that we as Badge.team are not looking for drama or anything like that. And that, also do during this talk, if you have questions about that, I'm not going to answer them. I hope you can respect that. So that being said, what to expect in this talk? Building a badge has many, many different routines that have to come together. So hardware development, which means like PCB development, mechanical construction, software development. You have to look at the integration of chipsets. You have to look at buses. You have to look at radio, antennas, just name things. It needs to look good. It needs to feel good. So you have UI interaction. And we only have 45 minutes. Which means that I had to kill a lot of darlings. I'm sorry for that. And basically, because of the set drama, I needed to get in the human aspect to also explain, if you build a batch in a design, like you make a design, you make a production, you have volunteers, how to plan things so those volunteers stay happy. You avoid conflict where possible, and you come to a product, preferably with everybody on board. Sometimes that doesn't work. But the first thing is that if you want to get to a place where you don't do double work, you plan your project well and you have defined stages. So you don't get scope creep, you don't get like redoing of work because there is a cool new idea. There's like commitment to every phase. So I tried to structure this talk in a way that the different activities are in these phases, and I used the South Park underpinning gnomes because best plan ever. And I'll come back to that slide. There will be a few points that will be talked about. So the first one is you brainstorm what would be cool, what would be awesome. You look at which ideas actually are doable. And you look at, okay, what things can we get sponsored? Because that makes a lot of difference in the capabilities you will have, because many hardware items are too expensive to just buy off shelf. And of course, if you get sponsored items, that means that these people want to show off the features so that those two processes are
aligned.
Yes. And usually they actually lead to better results because you restrict some things so people get more creative. Then it is the part of looking at feasibility, and that is mostly it's technical. It's also, do we have the people that can do these things? Do we have enough people? Do we have the money? Because, things are getting expensive. And then there is the thing where you commit to with the team together, like, to that proposal. It's a huge step for people to say, I commit, in contrary to one person saying, hey, I commit to this and you have to do this. That doesn't work, don't do that. Yeah, so here we have the planning. It takes a long time to make a good batch design. In this case, since we started 2 years before? Yep. 2 years. And then usually you still have a crunch at the end. So the clean project phases I talked about, no double work. Also, you cannot kill people's motivation better than to task to tell them, like, hey, the thing you did, do it again because we changed our mind. You make friends that way, really? I'm not going to go through every point here, but I do think that slides should be online somewhere. You should be able to look them up. The last point, though, is very important. That is something that is often forgotten in, I think, our community. That is, people are not psychic. You have to explain things to them. Otherwise, they basically will not know. And if you say things to people, make sure to tell them why you say that. And if you can, help them with the how question as well. And that makes all the difference. Then you have the batch itself. Usually you work to a price point. And for batches where it's basically the extra thing that comes to a ticket, the price point is usually as cheap as possible. Which means that things will get a lot more complicated in your designs because you cannot take the best parts for everything. You have to make sure that you have parts that are just good enough and have your engineers to compensate for the things that they where there is contention, and you have a deadline. So also, if you have people now in your if you have people now in your projects, those people have a life. Those people can come and leave. They can have a depression all of a sudden. They can decide to change jobs, change places, change everything. So you have to have a lot of slack in everything. And also, if you talk to people and you ask them, like, hey, how much effort will this be? And I had to really think about lotteries, because people always buy tickets with the idea that they will be a millionaire overnight. Very few become millionaires overnight, but it's the same with, if you ask people, like, how much work will this be? They'll be like, weekend. And people are just incurable optimists in some ways. And also, many people, including myself, have the habit of pushing things forward, like, I don't feel like it. It will be like, it will happen at some point. To procrastinate is human, which means that there's a real risk of having really, really harsh, having to work through the night just before the event and that kind of stuff, which you really don't want. And again, emotions, we have a lot of them in the nerd community, and I think we're the best people to deny them. But they're there in abundance. Be aware of them and try to help yourself and help others to, like, smooth things out and help the process in that way along as well. It's not only technology. Then you have the functionalities. This is what we basically landed on and what we wanted to show off at this batch, but it's like with all batches, is like the capabilities of the hardware that we got sponsored. In this case, it was a P4. The P4 is an ESP32 family CPU, and the big new thing is that it does MIPI DSI. I'm going to tell a little bit more about it later, but for now, for you, it's enough to know that it drives the display in your phone, basically. Other than that, we wanted wireless connectivity. We found somebody that... What was the name of the person again?
Solderpark.
Yeah. He had like a project that is awesome with like Metal Dome keyboards. And that was also offered for us at cost, right? Yeah. Awesome. We wanted to have something that made the Tanmatsu terminal like really cool. And that is why the antenna is there. So LoRa connectivity, USB on the go, you can use the badge to charge your phone a bit. The battery is not so good, but the powertrain is totally ready for it. So that's pretty cool. Stereo, high quality audio out. A high quality for me, I'm not an audiophile, so don't get me on there. And we want an expansion header so people can design their own extensions to it. So basically you can hack with it without like taking apart all the... Yes, way more. So what does that look like? That basically looks a lot like a lot of capabilities and a lot of things connected. You see the gray things, those are the different processors. Then you have blue, green and yellow, those are the different peripherals and how they are connected up. And of course the firmware team loves us for all those things that they have to mend together, but luckily Renzo, my co-designer, also wrote a lot of the drivers. So he made his own problems. And for the other people that didn't do the hardware, sorry. But that gives you an idea of how things get complex quickly if you have different parts and they all need to be integrated. They don't call it integration hell for nothing. Then you come to the point like, okay, we have all these things and we want to make it into hardware. People wear these things around their necks. It might be very warm. People are sweating. It might be that people with a lot of alcohol in their blood or the other way around run into things with the badge hanging on their back. It might be that they run into things or they kind of... you can name it and people will have like metal, like jewelry that might be close to the badge. How do you make sure that people... leave the event in the same state as they came in, more or less, and that whatever happens, it's not your badge that caused that. Those are very important things. The other things I'm going to go a little bit deeper on in the next slide, so that is the schematic design, PCB routing, the mechanical construction, and usability. But first, I'm going to introduce the basic technologies that are needed, that are on this badge, so we're all on the same page on that. I think many of you have already seen this, but we're beginning with very low level. There's a thing since the 90s where electrical interference became more and more of a problem with higher and higher speed buses. This is called differential signaling, and what it basically does is like you have two lines. If one goes high, the other one goes low, which has many advantages, especially since it tends to be much more resilient to outside interference, because the only thing you do is watch the differences between the two, and if interference comes in, it lifts both lines, the difference stays the same. And that's how you can get clear signals around. I'm not going to get very deep on this, but it's a rabbit hole, I can tell you. The next thing is the MIPI DSI that I already talked about, which drives your phone. And you see the squiggly lines towards the displays. Those are the differential signals that I talked about before. And the reason that they can do this with, I think we drive ours with 8 traces in total. 6 traces in total. The reason that they can that we can drive our display in so little with so little traces is because of the differential signaling, which is pretty cool. The only thing was that MIPI is like not an open standard like HDMI is, and also if you buy the displays, it was not easy to find out which commands you need to send to get it. Like initialized, which I think Renzo, you did most together with Julian, right?
So the display manufacturers give you, I guess. I don't have a microphone. Forget one.
There you go.
Awesome. Cool. Does it work?
No, it doesn't.
We already have the box.
The box.
Awesome. Does this work? Awesome.
Switch.
Yeah.
Attempt number 3.
Yeah.
Yay! Awesome. So yeah, display manufacturers will send you this list of initialization sequence data. which is usually just a register in the chip and the value to write to it. And it's always wrong. These people don't know what they're selling. So good luck.
Yeah. So that was like some excellent work there. So we had basically, before we had the P4 chips, we had our own like hack together stuff to drive these displays more or less. So we knew what we were talking about. So from that point onward, yeah, we knew that we could use the P4 for that. Another point is where you is LoRa. Now, I've heard a lot of things. There's actually a talk going on in a different venue here now about LoRa. And it stands for long range. So somebody was very creative that day. But the really cool thing is you see the trace on the... Is it also on the left for you? It's on the right for you. And the thing is that... What this does is that it works with these like radio signals that go up in frequency very quickly, which are called chirps, and they have a patented circuit which is like super sensitive. So you can have low power and quite a long range of communication. And LoRa, you see the thing on the right, is used as the base layer for mesh testings, which basically means that with the Itamatsu you can send messages to I think in the city environment is a kilometer away. Here you have trees which are basically antennas full of water, so it will also be around a kilometer. But you don't need any mobile phone services or whatsoever. So yeah, for an event, pretty awesome actually. And there is the last thing that comes with the C6, that is Zigbee, which is used a lot for home automation. Personally, we got it for free, and there are a lot of people very enthusiastic about it, so we decided to also support it. We got it with our Wi-Fi chip. I don't know if we can have it both enabled at the same time. We cannot. Okay, then we know one of the things that we are not capable of, but yeah. So those are the things that at least you should know of. And when I talk about things, you have an idea which, yeah, what things I'm talking about. Then at some point, you have the problem of, you can see the layout here of the board, complexity. And one of the things with complexity is that if you don't start right, you will end up with a huge mess. And it becomes harder and harder to make progress. And there is this thing where you have an amount of complexity you still feel comfortable by, and more complexity will basically lead to more and more yak shaving, which means like doing useless other tasks than the things that you actually should be doing. And at some point, you cannot develop further. So setting up things is quite important. So for that, you want to be clear. So the knowledge in your head in a team should not be only in your head. So that's clear communication, making sure that people know what you're doing. Split schematics and other things up in smaller blocks. One, they are easier to transfer to somebody else to solve. Two, it means that if you map those things out, you do not start with a whole bunch of spaghetti. That is very, very intimidating. And after like getting over the intimidation, you still have to start doing the work. It wastes time, it wastes motivation. 4 Eyes principle, difficult things like badges where the magic smoke can potentially escape. Basically, you blow up components. Yeah, you want to do that with 4 Eyes principle. Also, the things that can potentially break your design to the point that you have to order new PCBs. That's when you get 2 people involved, or maybe 3. But you make sure that you don't do that alone. Integrate solutions. If you can buy it off the shelf, and it's cheap, buy it off the shelf. And spend your time eliminating unknowns. If it's like, yeah, this and this, we don't really understand, but it will be fine. Usually it is, but when it isn't, and you do those things too many times, also the amount of times that you have places that you have to search in your design will, like, greatly like explode into more and more possibilities, especially if more than one thing is broken at the same time. Those things are not nice. So for that, keep it simple, stupid, which we did it as, we kept it as simple as possible. and take your time and think it through. If you feel the urge to just try stuff to see what works, take a step back, get good coffee, but just like switch and just get your patience back. It pays. At the end, you're done quicker. It's my experience, and I think most of us. So then we have the complexity. Next, what we are going to do is look at what else is there when you start, when you broke down the complexity and you go on to PCB design. The first thing is your thing will have a form factor in the real world. People have to hold it in their hands. The buttons have to be in a place. In our case, you can see here, there's a back to it. There's a front to it. Display, keyboard, we have expansion headers, we have a USB port, we have all kinds of things that stick out. How does this fit together? Where will interfaces be? One of the things that was discussed a lot in our project here, you can see that the connector here, we wanted to have flush, but we had constraints because through the whole component, you see this component actually ends up there, sticks out on the other side. And you see the black lines, that's where our LCD display lies flat on the PCB. And basically, if you don't look for that, and let's say that we would have produced it like this, we had to basically file down 4,000 of these pins and put tape over it, which is not feasible. So you have to think, like, in the way, like, how do we design this? How high are my components? What do I need to ask the people that make the other components to make room for this, or have a piece of their structure missing so your component can fit in? All these things need to fit together. And there is also a next thing. PCBs are made of fiberglass and resin, which is awesome. But the capacitors, they are made of, at least these ones, are made of ceramics. And the one bends and the other doesn't. So something has to give. And you can see here a simple layout thing. I'm not going to go through all of them, but please do look at the slides later. What happens when you do not do these things right? So you get this horror show. And I can tell you, repairing quite a lot of boards, is that these things are not easy to see. Yes. This leads to either things not behaving as they should because the capacitor does not decouple the components. So that means that you get interference that ends up in all the places you don't want it. The other situation is where you can see a nice crack through the ceramics here, which can lead to the plates, which are like interleaved like this, doing that. Which is a good recipe for magic smoke escaping. And these things happen over time because it flexes, and at some point, these things just give up. And with some of the simple rules that we had, like one slide back, like keep your distance, look at the orientation, you can basically make your batch survive the event with a bit of luck longer, which I think is a good thing, especially since this doesn't cost anything except for some brain power. Then you come to the point, like if you place your components, you've thought about how everything integrates, it comes to routing. And the external dependencies we just talked about, but that's the first thing you do, because these components, you have the holes in your housing, or you have your display in a certain place, you cannot move that easily. There's a lot of things depending on that. Again, when you do that stuff, you split it in zones. So you route a certain functionality first, you see how it fits, and make islands, and you try to not take everything on all at once, also for your own sanity. It's nice to be nice to yourself from time to time. And try to place bigger components first if you can, because those, if you have to move them later and they are not placed well, there are a lot of things that you then have to move as well, which is more work. We don't like more work unless it's useful. or when it's fun. And there is also a thing, in KiCad at least, I don't have a picture of it, you will see a thing called a rat's nest, which means that which pins go to what pin, and they're all straight lines. The less crossing of those, the better, because it means you don't have to later on route them via the back side and back to the front side, which just makes it basically a lot more work. In the end, add test pads so you can fix your own stuff, and most important, highest speed traces go first, because you don't want to have your high-speed traces going all over the place. Also saving work and saving headaches later. Power transmission, basically, as fat of a trace as you can handle. And the good thing about that is that if you use power planes, so those are the middle planes in your PCB, if you have four planes, you cannot have a fatter trace than your whole PCB. I have like a few pictures of that later. Because from here we go to the MIPI DSI PCB challenges. So you have very high speed signals. What do you need to do to route those correctly? For that I have to first go to impedance. And with impedance, if you look at very high speed signals, your trace is basically two plates, like you see the thing in the red circle, which is a capacitor. And guess what? Your trace is also one copper plate with a ground plate, a capacitor. Yes. Which means that you have a whole bunch of capacitors like lined up, because it's a long capacitor. Which means that there is continuously capacitors like charge up when you put a voltage on them, and which means that there is current flowing, which means that if you put a voltage on the left side, it goes to the right, and you are continuously charging these capacitors. And for different frequencies, those speeds of charging and discharging will be different, but for a set frequency, you can say there is a certain resistance, which you call impedance. So impedance is resistance for a certain frequency of electricity. What does that look to? You don't have three-layer PCBs, but the person that I stole this from made it a three-layer. It means that everything is coupled like this, and you basically are charging and discharging capacitors continuously. That's the question, why are you telling me this? There's a very good reason for that. This is what happens if the capacitors a little bit further on in the line have a different version of a different value in impedance than the ones before. You might have seen the demonstrations with slinkies where a person like gives it a yank and it just rebounds. This here looks kind of like orderly, and you think, I still have half of my signal left. Nope. Remember that usually if you go wider, you also have to go smaller. You have to enter the IC at some point. You have to go through connectors, so every time it does this a little bit, and worse, the signal that goes back will also reflect on the previous violation you did, which leads to a lot of reflections adding up, which meant that if you had a very clean and nice signal that went up and down, it now becomes more like a blob, which is very nice, but your display might glitch at times, or it might do all kinds of weird stuff, and if you want to find out what went wrong, good luck. So you try to like make it all in a nice way. So you do ground plane reference. You see here on the, what is it on your side, on the left here of me, you see 1 kilohertz, and you see the current goes basically one way here, and there's a copper plane behind, and the return current, you see it doesn't care. But if you go to 50 kilohertz, you see that the return current, because if it goes this way and then it goes back, it starts to follow the trace. So, 1 megahertz, which is for modern electronics not very fast, you see that it almost exactly follows that. And the challenge is, like, if you do all those things, you do not break your ground plane. Because the return current will basically have to do something to get to the other side. It will follow, it will basically, what you created then is an antenna, which means that you put all your power that you want in all your signal power that you wanted to have in your other chip and you gave it to the whole world, which is on the one hand very nice of you to do. On the other hand, you won't have a working system. So do not do this, but keep it like one copper plane. And especially with MIPI DSI, where we have like very, very high speeds with the differential traces. Let's see, where do I get that? Ah, yep. You see here, you will basically lose your signal and that will not be very good. Although this is a little bit more tolerant to that, what you basically want to do is not push your luck. I told you before, the more you like cut corners, the more you will be like, yeah, you'll be less nice to future you. Let's put it that way. There are like a few things that we had to be careful about while designing, which gave us pretty strict constraints. If we want to get the right impedance, we needed 4-layer PCB and also an impedance controlled PCB. That means that the manufacturer does like checks and makes sure that the quality of material they use will have the same impedance everywhere and that impedance is known. Again, to keep as much of the signal like clear and crisp and like of high clearness on the other side. Yes. So that basically looks like this. You have two traces, tiny little insulation that allows you to make the requirement of your impedance. Then you have a big core. That means that the humans won't break it easily. And the same on the backside, so you can also route on the backside of your PCB, which is also nice. And middle ones will usually be your reference planes, which I talked about with the copper pores. What you should do is remember that if you change reference planes, so that's like copper bottom, cotton top in the middle, and your signal goes from the one to the other, you are again basically breaking your ground plane, and you need to put capacitors there to give the high frequency current a way to return to home. And capacitors above a certain frequency will become basically a closed circuit. Yeah. So again, 45 minutes, look it up. I cannot explain everything, sorry. The other thing is that with the differential signals, it's also important that the distance stays the same because they're coupled together. So do not put components in the middle. Again, most likely your display will work, but I won't guarantee it. So, and here is one last thing. If you need to go from, you switch your two pairs, do not do this. Move it up and move it down the other way. They did forget the capacitors there, though. So not everything is good, but it's good enough to show the principle. Yeah. There is another thing. Common mistakes. I have looked through several designs, also of other badges, to help people to debug stuff. Basically, there is a page of every producer, JLC PCB, every other one. They will tell you their constraints. They'll tell you the text is not allowed to be smaller than this. The letters are not allowed to be thinner than this. The traces should not be wider than this or smaller. They have to be a certain distance apart from each other. If you break those rules, they will send you a very nice email and you can say, just do it, and I don't care if it will work. But they will not care either. So keep to that. It prevents you from having to do things again and again. Also, make sure that the signal traces are the things people will focus on, so those are usually fat, and the power traces are an afterthought, and human mind works really interesting because those are usually thin, while it should be the other way around because your power traces carry power, indeed. So, yeah, be aware of that. That all being said, and also the The thing is that you can get away with breaking a lot of these rules to a certain extent. But yeah, like I told you before, you will make things more difficult for yourself. You might get problems when you bring your project somewhere and it's more noisy and it picks up noise and you won't know what happened and you take it out of your bag at home and the thing works again. All those things. And yeah, you can also have Heisen bugs, and those are the most annoying to fix because it might be that some chips align. There's a dip enough to trigger another chip. So basically, here things go wrong, and you have to find out that with five things together, it came from there. Not nice problems. So don't do that. But during prototyping, we did get away with some shit. But this is literally YOLO. But we proven the principle, but this is nowhere near production. So be aware that if you see this stuff, yes, we're responsible, and no, we do not advise it to you. The next thing is the batch prototypes, and that is the first prototype. We had several things, but the second prototype, we had like problems where the basically the USB on the go, which means that the batch can be a USB host, and you can like charge your phone and do all kinds of cool stuff with it. It should have done 2.4 amps with 200 milliamps. It decided to completely die. What are you looking at such points? So this is to keep you in a, to get you in the mindset of where, how do you think systematically about these things? Is my battery good enough? Are the wires that we ordered thick enough for what we want? 2 amps, I can tell you these ones are pushing it. Did I make my traces fat enough? And yes, I made that mistake. Is the circuit itself good enough? So even though the datasheet says it, did we make the planes good enough? Did we put things together close enough? Like, there are all kinds of things. Then it turned out that the PMIC is a Texas Instruments chip. And we had the problem, like, hey, we build it. They say typical application, awesome, done. 200 milliamps. That, and we spent 2 weeks? Yep. Yeah. It turned out that in the datasheet, it says 9.3, but it was about 10 pages lower. They had the actual implementation with the one Zener diode. It was literally one Zener diode that cost us 2 weeks of headaches because they had one built in, and apparently it was under spec'd. And these things means that, yeah, even though it is to read the whole data sheet, and especially if it's long, it's sometimes really like a pace to just go for it and just take the time. And thank you, Texas Instruments, by the way. Then there is other stuff. I'll make it very short. We had two chips, and you can program them all via USB. Problem was that the Wi-Fi chip just didn't show up if we just connected up the batch without the battery attached. I first said, like, we have a battery attached always, but then she said, yeah, let's get it the correct way. And of course, we wanted to do that, but the problem was so bad that AMD PCs, basically, the whole USB controller dropped off the bus. So, okay, what's happening there? And we went through the same thing, schematics, did we make a boo-boo, all that stuff. What turns out is that the spec stuff, out-of-spec stuff, yeah, we found a dev board, I think by Espressive themselves, or was it just some Chinesium? Okay, it's Chinesium. And they, after a lot of datasheet reading, we found that they did not experience the problem. And what turns out is that if you have this kind of stuff, and you have a pull-down resistor of 1.5K, the whole thing doesn't show up on the bus because it turned out that the 10-cent USB hub that we used already tried to do negotiations before the C6 was on the bus at all that reflected back it couldn't get something back that it understood, so it told the PC, I have something. No, I don't. And it did it in such a fast way that AMD laptops were totally, like, impressed by that. So the hack, what they did was, like, have an enable signal. When it's low, you have a pull down. So it's not on the bus. When it's high, it works. Basically, it was totally out of spec when we talked to Expressive, like, oh, this should not be done. It's out of spec. We're like, it works. And if it works, it's not a stupid idea. So that is how we fixed that one. The lessons learned here, data sheets are not always straightforward. If you've done something 10 times, it means, you cannot do it more. Reuse as many designs that are proven as possible. Have a budget for prototypes. You will not be able to do it without if you have a certain amount of complexity or for your own sake of and nerves, you don't want to. And the later your prototype is, the smaller your changes. Also, to not like keep your risk so high that the prototypes were basically for nothing. Okay, then we go for pre-production. That means that you have to get things ready for things to be produced. In our case, the only producers that are cheap enough are in China. It's what it is. You need to be able to tell them, like, hey, the stuff works. And you can't go there, so you have to have your software that tells that for you. So that's the first boot check. You need to be able to have the design in a place that there are no big problems left. Because even if it's just a small problem. If you have 4,000 batches, the problem will be 4,000-fold. Not fun. We had some experience with SHA batch with that. 2,000-fold?
Yeah.
Took us 2 weekends?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was very nice, though, and the pizza was good. But, yeah. And... Yes, and you still have to think about to get things compatible with the factory you are going to get it produced in. And that is another problem. Factories have different capabilities, but they all want to have your order because they want to make money. And the factories are so far away that you cannot get into your car in a reasonable amount of time. Go there, watch, and be back by dinner. It's like China is a bit too far for that. So you see a nice like expected versus reality thing. You don't want that with your badge.
And you are now not allowed to go to China.
Yeah. I don't care. And there is also the thing that you have a deadline. So if things fail, you basically have to go back, which could take months, missing the deadline. So, what you want to do is work around those production risks. Ask other people that have already done this. One of the biggest things that saved us from this whole list is that we found a person from Germany, I think he is, that lives in China. And he basically has a company, Alnet, and he helped us. He went actually to these factories to see what they were doing and sent us videos. Huge thanks to him. Yes. Then you have the production. The manufacturer has to accept it. The first production tryouts will basically all fail because even though everything works well with one supplier, the reality is that every pick and place machine works a little bit different, and they all find a way to break your design. Then you have the part, which I already said quickly, the quality control. So again, have factory testing firmware. Make sure that they have test batches first and they send you a video of the things so you know what you're getting and that it is the right color, the thing you meant, that the LEDs light up at the right place. Very important. Then you have the final assembly. I have 1 minute. Yay. The final assembly basically means get friends together, a lot of caffeine, pizza, and just make very simple, repeatable tasks. And then you have the final touches where you make sure that the batches that go into the bag are fully functional. You put all the goodies in there in the bags. you package it, and you have profit. Then 30 seconds, we can do the lessons. Prototypes, important. You don't want to go without them. And whatever you do, even if it's very tempting, do not do last-minute changes. Those things are made from, the nerves of that developers. Yeah. Questions in 8 seconds now. Is it in there or is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
We will.
What is that behind you?
And this is like a resistor, and it decided to become a light bulb.
Light emitting resistor, a LED.
And that's why this is the magic smoke. This is the moment the magic smoke found freedom, and I found that kind of emotional. So yeah, it's in there.
When you don't power, everything is a light bulb, right?
Yes. That's wisdom that I cannot disagree with. No. Any other questions?
And this time, wait until you have the microphone so other people can hear you.
Anion.
That works.
I'm sorry for not making it a question, but a comment.
Yeah.
During the sweatshop, give away some badges to some of the people at the sweatshop. They might find some last errors you forgot or missed.
Yes. Don't underestimate the power of 4,000 users to find every mistake possible. Mendel.
Yes, yes. Can you please step a little bit to the right or the left so I can see the magic smoke escaping better? Thank you.
Why didn't you include sample questions?
The last time they were actually asked, and that was not what I wanted. Yes.
So what motivates you guys to work on deadline-driven projects with hardware?
Basically, the people that you get to know and the knowledge that you get is just something that you can I can personally be happy of for the next years to come. And it's just awesome. I don't know. It's something that you either want to do or do not want to do, I think.
And is it getting better after each project, or is it like the same drill again?
It's getting better. We learned a lot about planning, so phases and making sure that you get people on the same page before you do things and like communicate better. And that's something that I think, especially in the beginning, we had like some very good friends together that worked, but then you get more into the community. People don't know each other as well. Communication, and it sounds very cheesy, but it does make a difference, even though now we had a little bit of drama. Yeah.
So one last troll question. Would you go agile on hardware projects?
Very ambitious. Okay. Anybody else questions, or is the time up? I'm looking at the sound booth. Yeah, I see red here, so I take the hint. I thank you all for your time.